You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. But of course, we've finished the Bible, so now we're talking about the stories that seem like they should be in there but simply aren't. My name is Nico Bakulich.
I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And we're about to get biblical.
Let's get biblical.
You got it. But before we do, we have to remind you that this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
And it is not appropriate for youngins. Or other children.
That's right. I am the non-believing sort of Jew.
I'm the ex-Christian. I was raised Presbyterian. I'm now an atheist. What book are we talking about here tonight, baby?
Well, that's an interesting question also, young baby of mine.
Yes, I am young. Continue.
Because we're not talking about a book of all. Well, not in the traditional sense, because it's not in the Bible.
It's not in the Bible.
We're talking about a little piece of work. It's a serious piece of work. And it's called Third Baruch.
Or the Greek Apocalypse of Baruch.
Not to be confused with the Syriac Apocalypse of Baruch.
A.K.A. Second Baruch. Now, I gotta jump in with some fast facts here. There are four apocryphal books labeled as First, Second, Third, and Fourth Baruch.
Baruch is really the catch-all trash can for just whatever people want to assign
a
name to.
They are all written by completely different authors in completely different time periods. So don't worry, you're not missing...
No offense to Baruch or his descendants.
Well, you're not missing... We're doing Third Baruch because it seemed like it would be the best podcast episode, but you're not missing anything from First and Second because those are completely separate texts. The reason they're all titled Baruch is because they all claim to be written by Baruch, the friend and scribe of the prophet Jeremiah. You may remember from our episode on the book of Jeremiah that he had one friend and one friend only, and it was Baruch. You may remember from our Jeremiah episode that Jerry and Barry were always on the run from King Zedekiah together. That was...
Can you believe the antics those two got up to?
You know, they were getting thrown in water cisterns. They were just living it up.
You can't keep those young men out of the cistern.
They were talking about nasty fig boys. That's where that's from. So Second Baruch, also known as the Syriac Apocalypse of Baruch, and that's why we gotta call ours the Greek one. So Third Baruch was written sometime after the destruction of the Second Temple in 70 AD, so probably in like the 100s or so. Unclear what language it was originally written in. We have extant manuscripts in Greek and Old Slavonic.
Although it is extant in two languages, the Greek version of the text was unknown to scholars until the very end of the 19th century.
Oh, was it?
Yes. According to the Jewish Encyclopedia, quote, "The world of learning was astonished by M.R. James' publication of the Greek text, until then entirely unknown in text and studies."
Mr. James gave it to us?
1897. Yes,
Mr. James?
Dr. Mr. Spooky Boy James.
Oh my gosh, what a hero.
Apparently the one who discovered the Greek version of the text or hunted it down. We know he was a famous ghost hunter.
And, yes,
and
definitely.
The ghost he was hunting in this case was
the Spirit of the Lord, the Holy
Spirit
Ghost.
Of the Lord,
yeah.
In the Apocrypha. So he was the one apparently who brought it to public conception.
Well, good for him.
And it differs from the Old Slavonic version of text in some ways.
I didn't read about this, so I'm excited to hear what you have to say about it. Where did you read this text? Because I read it on the Wayback Machine, a page from UPenn, a page which no longer exists and needed to be archived.
I read it on Early Jewish Writings, which I believe had a copy of the UPenn thing, because there was a big Apocrypha digitization project at UPenn, I believe,
around
the
year,
like
the
late 90s and 2000, which may have gone offline on their site, but has been like mirrored around the web, so to speak. But I read it on the delightful earlyjewishwritings.com.
Excellent. So shall we dive in?
I would love to.
Okay, so our story.
Now, this is a classic tale of one man.
there is one main guy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's my main contribution to the discussion, so you may continue now.
Our story takes place around 600 BC. Jeremiah, of course, was a prophet during this time. He and his buddy Baruch were always stomping around, you know, telling the wicked Judean kings, listen, you got to stop worshiping idols.
Was this news they were happy to hear? No.
You gotta get all your subjects to stop worshiping idols, or God is going to destroy this nation to punish us. And yes, we are God's chosen people, but God is going to use these dudes to punish us. He's going to punish them later, but he's going to punish us now, and it's going to suck real bad.
So that's when the Babylonians tromped through and destroyed Jerusalem.
Yes.
Although Jeremiah apparently was so confident that Jerusalem would rise again. He bought a field. A detail that is loudly professed both in the Bible and in rabbinical texts.
And
it's brought up every time Jeremiah's prophecies are brought up.
In the NIV, the chapter is titled Jeremiah Buys a Field. Yeah, so this, you know, Babylonia took over. They sacked Jerusalem. They destroyed the first temple, and they exiled the Jews. That's what's known as the Babylonian exile. But about 70 years later, Persia took over Babylonia, and they let the Jews
commonly
go
called Babylon.
Yes. Well, Babylon is the capital city, but also whatever. It doesn't matter. Literally, nobody cares. Okay, so our book starts with Baruch standing upon the river Gel, the river Gel, a river of gel. That's where all the youth pastors got that hairstyle, from the river of Gel. And Baruch is weeping and asking God why he had to destroy Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Now, an angel named Famael comes down and says, "Dear Baruch, quit your bitching. This is all part of God's plan, and he sent me to show you some mysteries." And now, much like in other apocryphal books that we've read, this angel's going to take him on a tour of several levels of heaven, the first heaven, the second heaven, and so forth, in this case, through the fifth heaven.
Mm-hmm. So, very interestingly, I love what the angel says when he comes down and finds poor Baruch weeping by the river, weeping over the destruction of his city, as he says, God's vineyard set on fire. The angel says, "Cease to provoke God, and I will show thee other mysteries greater than these." As if to say, like, please stop crying and prophesying.
Quit your bitching. So, as soon as the angel comes down, Baruch is, of course, very, you know, astonished and awed to see an angel.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Okay, I'm going to listen to everything you say very carefully. I won't say another word." The exact quote is, "God shall add to my judgment in the day of judgment if I speak hereafter."
Mm-hmm. He proceeds to ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, so Famael swoops him up through the firmament into the first heaven. They go through a giant door. Immediately, Baruch breaks his promise not to talk and asks Famael, "How far did we just travel?" Actually, his exact words are, "Make known to me, I pray thee, what is the thickness of the heaven in which we journeyed?"
So this book is very obsessed with the size of things, and I assume it has...
Especially the thickness.
Mm-hmm. I assume it has to do with some sort of a numerological significance that is lost upon us as, let's just face it, fallen people of the modern age.
I think this book is just down with the thickness. To Baruch, it seems like first... we're moving on. Don't talk. To Baruch, it seemed like this first...
I promise, before God, those are the last words I'll speak on this podcast.
It seemed like 30 days to him.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a 30 days journey, but they just like traveled it in a few minutes. So Famael says, "We just traveled from earth to heaven, right? And then going through that doorway that we went through, this giant door, was the same distance as Earth to heaven. Mm-hmm. And then we flew across a plane that was the same distance again.
Right.
So, you know, pretty long way. What do we find in the first heaven, Niko Bakulich?
Well, Lauren, my wife.
Yes.
There were simply men dwelling thereon.
What kind of men were these?
The faces of oxen, the horns of stags, and the feet of goats.
The faces of four oxen. No, that's the verse, isn't it? That's the verse number. Okay. Keep going.
Not to mention the haunches of lambs.
And who are these men? Why do they look like this?
Baruch asked, "Show me, what are these men?" And he, the angel, said to me, "These are they who built the Tower of Strife against God, and the Lord banished them. These are the builders of the Tower of Babel."
The Tower of Babel. Now, their situation doesn't seem to be so bad.
They're literally in heaven.
Well, they're in the first heaven.
Well, come on.
I mean, it doesn't seem to be heavenly per se, but they're not being tortured or anything. It seems to be just like a huge plane with some creepy goat guys, mm-hmm. and they're just chilling.
And how many of them could there really be? So what I'm saying is it's not crowded, you know. They have plenty of space to roam around, which they need with their powerful haunches.
Yeah, the haunches of lambs. Mm-hmm. We're done with those guys. We're going to the second heaven. And this time the journey through the giant doorway is the distance of a 60-day journey.
Okay.
So it's twice as long, yep. twice as thick.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got another plane here with some other creepy men, but this time the men have the appearance of dogs, and their feet were like those of stags. And these are the people who gave counsel to build the Tower of Babel. So I guess these are like the supervisors.
Yeah, these are the people who had the idea, I guess, rather than the people who laid the bricks.
And they made men and women like make bricks 24/7. And it says even pregnant women, they would just have to, like, give birth and then, like, carry the child in their apron and keep making bricks.
Yeah, this is from a rabbinical legend that's recorded in Pirkei Rabbi Eleazar, and it's almost identical. Except, of course, the Jewish woman is in Egypt and is helping to build monuments there, not helping to build the Tower of Babel.
Mm.
So it's an adaptation of an extant rabbinical legend. So how about that for scholarship?
How about that? This tower, how tall is it?
What, the original tower?
Yeah.
The original tower was, I didn't write it down, but isn't it like 463 cubits or something like that?
You didn't write that down?
No.
It is 463 cubits, which is about 700 feet.
And what do they do when they build this fantastical, phantasmagorical tower?
Baby, let me tell you, they took a gimlet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a little piercing tool.
Oh, I would thought it was a delicious cocktail.
It's also a great podcast network that we're not on. And they tried to pierce heaven to see if it was made out of clay, brass, or iron. The three things that you assume heaven would be made out of. Obviously, God could not allow this. So he smote them with blindness and confused their speech and apparently made them look like dogs with stag feet.
It's a standard punishment, right? Yeah.
All right, let's move up to the third heaven.
We are slamming through
these
heavens.
This time, the journey takes the length of 6 months, a long-ass journey.
Right.
Who's even been on a journey for 6 months? Who even knows how long that is?
That is a long walk.
And
we don't know, of course, whether he's in a cart led by, of course, asses or horses.
Or some sort of hooved beast.
Mm-hmm.
We're on another giant plane, of course. That's what all the heavens are. And here there's a serpent, which appeared to be 200 plethora in length.
Did you look up what a plethora was?
Well, I looked up what a plethron.
Plethrum? A plethrum?
Yeah, it's about 100 feet.
Okay.
So this serpent is about 4 miles long.
What? Damn, that's a long-ass serpent.
It's a long-ass serpent. There's also a monster named Hades.
Right.
Who closely resembles the serpent, but also his appearance is dark and abominable.
So did you remember when we talked about differences between the Slavonic text and the Greek text?
I remember you mentioned it.
Well, this chapter is apparently full of them. Because the Greek text is, in this chapter specifically, and I think you know the parts that I'm talking about, full of later interpolations.
Okay.
While the Slavonic text has a better version of this chapter that is probably closer to an older version of it.
All right, so everybody watch out.
Watch out.
This next part of the podcast is full of interpolations.
Heavily interpolated.
These two monsters, Hades and also a serpent, they eat the bodies of the wicked. So the third heaven is kind of like hell in that regard. I don't know. I don't really understand it. I think it's weird that there's two levels devoted just to people who built the Tower of Babel.
Yeah, it really seems like one of those scenarios where you start to write a card and you think you give yourself plenty of space to write the message. And then like later on, you realize there's not enough space and your writing becomes really small.
You're like writing a poster like a protest.
Totally.
And then it ends up looking stupid.
Yes. So the first two heavens were like, dude, I got so many heavens left to go here. You know, like the first two are obviously you got to get these two out of the way. And it's important that they're on different levels. But here we're starting to
we're starting
to realize we're running out of heavens pretty quick and we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
So there's two serpents. They eat the bodies of the wicked. They also drink a lot of the sea.
Yes.
Although it's unclear to what end.
Well, it's very clear to what end. The angel explains it when our buddy, what the fuck is his name?
Baruch?
Yeah, our buddy Baruch is real confused about it.
What does he say?
Well, so God created seven rivers.
Yeah.
And they all flow into the sea.
Yeah.
But that's too many rivers for the world.
Well, why did God create too many for the world?
I have no fucking idea, baby. You got to ask the big man.
So now a monster has to come in and fix this?
Yes.
Due to God's mistake?
It's a real, like, you know, right before it goes gold, you have to push a bunch of, a bunch of fixes really quick, and maybe they're not as considered as you would like. But yes, so we had to implement some sort of gigantic sea monster to eat the excess water.
Okay.
I think it's supposed to teach us a lesson about the balance of the world
okay.
or something.
Sure. I mean, it is reminiscent of some of the giant legendary beasts that we talked about in our last episode, particularly the Leviathan.
Yeah, who this is obviously.
Yeah, it's obviously based on that.
Right.
Yeah. Famael also tells a very interesting story to Baruch about the tree which led Adam astray.
Well, that was Baruch's question.
Yes.
Like, he's a tourist in heaven,
and like Enoch... He's sworn that every time he talks, God will add to his judgment on Judgment Day.
But he's
therefore,
full of questions.
He's got to ask a bunch of questions.
But just like Enoch, he wants to see the tree of the fruit of knowledge of good and evil.
Yes. And in this story, interestingly, the forbidden fruit that Adam ate, also it doesn't even mention Eve.
Mm-hmm.
The forbidden fruit that Adam ate was a vine planted by Samael, which is also a name for the devil or Satan or fallen angel. And then a few generations later, when God flooded the earth and, by the way, wiped out 409,000 giants, according to this text.
Yeah.
Very precise number. This vine wasn't destroyed. It was uprooted and cast aside.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the flood, Noah found it. And he was like, why did God make this vine of all the plants survive? This is the vine that screwed Adam over. I don't think I should plant it. But if God made it survive, maybe I should. I don't know. And so then God sent down the angel Sarasael to say, yes, go ahead and plant it because it will make wine. And wine will be the blood of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And God is taking Adam's original sin and turning it into a blessing. That's what Jesus does. He takes sin and he redeems it with his blood. But, an important caveat.
Caveat.
Important.
The angel caveat.
Important caveat. The people who drink this beautiful gift of wine to get drunk are sinning worse than Adam.
That's right.
That's us.
It's a very interesting take, and was apparently a common sort of justification for Noah's drunkenness.
Yeah, it's interesting. This would tie in extremely neatly with the canonical story of Noah in the canonical Bible, because he does indeed plant vines. He like invents wine.
Right.
He gets drunk, and that leads to the curse of Ham, which is kind of a big deal. That's completely not mentioned in this text.
No.
It seems like...
I think it's implied, though.
I mean, I guess it's implied, but it seems like it's introduced specifically to tie up this loose end, but then it's never addressed directly. Yeah.
But we did talk about as well in our Noah episode about how Noah's name means to be at rest or to be resting or
something like that.
And how that might tie in with his like association with agriculture and him, you know, planting the vine after the flood and blah, blah, blah. I think it's attached this stuff. Also, this is very obviously a Christian interpolation added later.
Well, yeah. I mean, do we know that for sure? I mean, obviously either the original. I mean, obviously it's Christian.
I don't think there's.
It's talking about Jesus Christ.
I mean, I am not an expert, obviously, on the text.
You're not?
Well.
Why are you even on this podcast?
No, I'm just.
Did I even marry you if you're not a fucking biblical expert?
That's a great question. However, I think the Jewish Encyclopedia thinks that it's a Christian interpolation. Also, several other places that I did read from a Jewish perspective consider this an interpolation later.
It does seem weird and out of place a little bit, especially because the next stuff that we're going to see is very Greek.
Right. And I also think, if I may, it's interesting that...
You mayn't.
This story about...
I told you mayn't.
About Adam, that the vine was the thing that brought the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil to him.
Yeah, it was grapes.
Establishes canonically that alcohol is, of course, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Wow. Let's take a break.
You got it, babe. See you in a second.
Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I am Lauren.
And I'm still Nico.
He's still Nico, and we are talking about Third Baruch, a.k.a. the Greek Apocalypse of Baruch?
That's right, baby.
Damn. Well, we're going to see some Greek influence right now. We're in the middle of the third heaven.
Mm-hmm.
The angel Famael is freaking blasting Baruch up and down these heavens.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the middle of the third heaven.
Simply mind-blasting him with heavenly knowledge, if you don't mind my saying so.
And in the third heaven is the sun.
Yep.
And the
That's where sun lives.
That's where sun lives. He lives in third heaven. And he is a man wearing a crown of fire and riding in a chariot. You can see the Greco-Roman influence here, although his chariot is drawn by 40 angels.
Right.
Flying with the sun's chariot is a giant bird, which Famael tells Baruch is the phoenix. We mentioned in our Beasts of the Bible episode last time that the phoenix did have a place in Jewish mythology, and I guess early Christian mythology as well. This is a version of the phoenix I've never encountered because his job is to stretch out his wings to shield the earth from the sun's rays, because otherwise they would be too hot and they would burn the earth up.
Do you know why you maybe have never encountered this definition of the phoenix before?
Why?
It's probably cribbed from Indian mythology.
Indian mythology. That's interesting. We did talk about in our Beast of the Bible episode how the idea of the phoenix originally came from Egypt and was adapted in lots of different cultures.
So it's either a coincidence or this is probably cribbed from Indian stuff, because the description of this bird accompanying the sun on his travels and shielding the world.
Yeah, he's the ozone layer.
Right, yeah. Ozone bird is very, very similar to the description of Garuda.
The eagle!
That's right. The companion of the sun god Vishnu. And the Jewish Encyclopedia asks me, and by definition, you, the listener, to compare this passage.
I thought you meant me as your wife.
Well, it doesn't really ask anything of you for reasons that you understand. Ask us to compare this passage with the Mahabharata, Adiparva sections, et cetera, et cetera. So apparently, which I did look up, and and the description is remarkably similar.
Interesting,
including details that we'll get into right now about the phoenix in this book, specifically that if the bird weren't there, if the bird wasn't there, baby, human life, all life on Earth would be burnt to cinders because the sun is too powerful.
Does the Garuda have on his right wing giant golden letters that say, "Neither earth nor heaven bring me forth, but wings of fire bring me forth"?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
But
I was hoping you could explain that to me.
I'm not an expert on that subject either.
Now, Baruch asks the question on everyone's mind. Does the bird excrete?
Yes.
Here is this amazing giant bird.
To give Baruch some credit here.
Yeah.
He first asks what the bird eats.
Okay.
And the bird eats manna from heaven and the dew on the face of the world or some shit.
We'll get into that later.
Now, a thinking man like Baruch obviously was would traverse the future and
the
say...
The digestive system.
Yeah, so if he eats, he's got a shit.
He's like, you know, I see these giant golden letters. What's the poop situation?
Right.
And Fahmael says, yes, the bird does excrete. The bird excretes a worm. And the worm excretes cinnamon, a valuable spice used by kings and princes.
Now, I think this is supposed to be ironical, you know?
You think it's supposed to be ironical?
I think so. I think that it's supposed to be poking fun at the...
kings and princes who are...
The kings and princes of this
flavoring
world.
Flavoring their food with the sinner's spice, cinnamon. That's why it has sin in the name.
That's right. And wouldn't they be surprised to learn it was merely the shittim of a worm from heaven.
Now, as they watch, Baruch sees the bird grow smaller and smaller, and I guess that's after the sun has set and the world doesn't need to be shielded from its rays, or like as the sun sets. But then, bam, as it rises, the phoenix returns to full size and spread out his wings. And I guess that's this version of the phoenix being reborn.
Yeah. Also, funnily enough, when the sun sets, a crew of angels take the crown off.
Yes, four angels.
And they polish it. They spend all night polishing it and removing the grit from it.
Yes, because its rays have been defiled.
That's right.
By beaming down on the earth and witnessing all our nasty sins.
An interesting quantum theory whereby the observer is affected by observation.
It's true.
Or something along those lines.
Yep.
Anyway, humanity's sins are bouncing up the photons that are being emitted by this crown and are frankly dirtying the shit out of it.
And the phoenix can do nothing to shield them.
Yeah, oddly enough, the phoenix, the shielding only works one way,
It only
right?
goes one
it
way.
It prevents us from getting pop-tarted up in a bad
way. What did
way.
You just call me?
But it does not prevent the crown itself from being dirtied by our acts.
Yes.
So the bird is sunproof. But not sin-proof.
The bird is the word. Now we see the moon's chariot
Logos,
as well.
What we call it.
We see the moon's chariot as well. This time a woman is driving the chariot. Again, you see the Greek / Roman influence. Also, for some reason, some of the angels drawing the moon's chariot take the form of oxen and lambs. It's not explained. It seems a little weird when like the terrible Babel builders were like kind of mixed with oxen and lambs.
Yeah.
And Baruch asks why the moon only shines at night. And Fahmael says, and I quote, "In the presence of a king, the courtiers cannot speak freely. So the moon and the stars cannot shine in the presence of the sun." So that's the third heaven. There's a lot going on.
May I interject a little bit more about the moon?
I will allow it.
The moon, apparently, according to rabbinical legend, which is echoed somewhat here with a sort of Greek patina applied, patina, excuse me.
Both are acceptable in my mind.
The moon was once as large as the sun and even more beautiful.
What?
Did you know that? but at Adam's fall, it did not display the proper compassion and was therefore made to wax and wane. But even above the sun and moon, what is that? I spy a fourth heaven?
Man, can we even? There's so much that happened in the third heaven. There's the two giant serpent things. There's a phoenix that's the ozone layer. There's
right.
The sun and the moon.
We heard the story of the flood.
And now we're just going to zoom up to the fourth heaven. It's a little less involved.
What delights await us here?
We don't know how thick the doorway is, for one thing. Doesn't tell us.
A huge oversight. Although I think we could do the math. I think it's some pretty simple algebra. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, it would probably be 1 year.
Something like that.
1 year's worth of travel. There's another plane, of course. This one has a big pool of water in the middle.
And here in the text, I want to be clear, it's described as plane P-L-A-I-N, not P-L-A-N-E.
That's true.
As if we were playing Dungeons and or Dragons.
Yeah, it's not like a geometric dimension. Mm-hmm. It's just like a plane. It's just like a flat piece of land.
Well, it's both, but in the text, it is a plane.
And this one has a big pool of water in the middle with a bunch of big birds in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not as big as the phoenix, but
still quite large.
Yes. For example, there's a crane as big as an ox. And I may be interpreting this wrong, but I think...
No, honey. Honey.
I think... Let me prepare for what I'm about to say. It's earth-shaking. I think Fahmael tells Baruch that the birds are the souls of the righteous.
Yep.
They're the souls of the people who continually sing praise to the Lord.
That's correct.
And that this is their heaven. They get to live as very large birds and just sing all the time and hang out with each other as birds.
Yeah, so there's this idea of the angelic choir,
mm-hmm.
right? That there's a class of angels who just sit up in heaven and get to sing to God all the time. And I think this is an image that's related to that, except for some reason people get transmuted into birds.
It's very interesting. We've seen in the actual Bible so many times there's choirs of angels
mm-hmm.
singing, you know, holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. But they've never been transfigured into birds before.
It's a beautiful image, I think.
Fahmael also explains that water from this pool where all the birds are hanging out trickles down into the clouds on Earth and becomes rain, but not regular rain.
No.
Which comes from the sea and from the waters on Earth. So whoever wrote this book did understand the water cycle.
Yes.
But the water that comes from this fourth heaven pool is a special rain called the Dew of Heaven.
It's not further elaborated on. We're just supposed to accept that there's good rain and bad rain.
But who ate it before?
That's what the phoenix drinks.
The phoenix drinks.
Yeah.
The dew of heaven.
Which I guess actually that makes perfect sense now because we're one layer above.
We're one layer above.
So it's got to trickle down and the phoenix got to get a little taste.
It doesn't, quote, stimulate the fruits on Earth.
Wow. Sounds like a personal problem.
Yes. Are we ready for the fifth heaven here?
Yeah.
Fifth and final heaven?
Yeah. I mean, here's the big thing that I didn't want a spoiler
mm-hmm.
before.
Yeah.
It was a heated discussion behind the scenes about whether we should spoil this or not.
Okay.
But for some reason, this text is frankly effed up.
Uh-huh.
They only talk about five heavens.
There's
what?
Only five heavens in this text.
I think there's supposed to be seven.
Nope, there's only five. And when we get to the fifth one, the gate is closed. We don't get to see how thick this doorway is because the gate is closed. But lo and behold, here comes the Archangel Michael.
Yeah. It's simply a will he or won't he situation.
He's got the keys to the gate.
He being Michael and will or he won't open the gate.
And he's carrying a giant jug as deep as the distance from heaven to earth, a.k.a. the same thickness as the first gate.
Uh-huh.
And I like Michael and Fahmael have a moment where they salute each other.
That's right.
And Michael, well, Fahmael's like, you know, hail commander of all angels or whatever. And then Michael's like, hail, guy who reveals revelations to righteous people.
Yeah.
And then...
It is kind of awkward, though. I don't know. As,
it does seem
as
a little...
As written, it
yeah.
seems very strange.
It's very formal. They're definitely in different social circles.
Yeah. Work friends. Not friend friends.
Fahmael tells Baruch that this giant jug... is where the good deeds... Stop laughing at giant jugs. This is where the good deeds of the righteous go. I guess kind of like the bodies of the wicked got et by the two snakes in the third heaven. Here's where the deeds of the righteous go.
You know what we never found out? What? We found out what they ate. Didn't find out what they shitted, though.
Oh, yeah. Do you think it was a different spice? Do you think it was a less valuable spice?
Probably.
What's the least valuable spice? Salt?
Pepper?
Pepper?
Salt's very valuable.
Oh, you're right.
Not only as a spice.
At least it was at the time.
Yeah.
You think these serpents are eating the bodies of the wicked and shitting pepper?
Let's just say yes and move on.
Okay. Anyway, some angels start flying up with baskets of flowers to pour into the giant jug. And these flowers are the merits of the righteous.
Yeah. Some of these angels, they appear with frankly brimming baskets.
Yes.
Some of them have baskets only half full. Some of them approach with empty baskets.
And they're all sad and they don't even want to approach. And they're just like ashamed of their baskets.
No,
and they're like,
weeping and wailing.
They're like, don't even look at me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, please assign us to better humans. Because these guys are out there fucking and sucking and not going to church. They're murmuring and whispering and we can't fill our baskets with flowers under these conditions. And then Michael is like, look, I can't transfer you because you got to keep watching over these.
Somebody's got to watch them fucking suck.
Yeah, we got to keep Satan out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, I'll run this up the flagpole to God and we'll see what he says. So Michael departs, thunder crashes, and Baruch is like, what is that sound? And Famael is like, that's Michael presenting the righteous deeds to God. It's very, very momentous, thunderous event.
Yeah.
And then Michael comes back, and here's the quote. And in that very hour, Michael descended, and the gate was opened, and he brought oil.
That's right.
This guy brought oil.
Mm-hmm.
So all the angels that had full flower baskets, Michael fills their baskets with oil.
Now, filling a basket with oil is just modern basket technology so shitty that I can't imagine a basket being filled with oil?
Listen, this is metaphysical oil and metaphysical baskets. I mean, the deeds aren't literally flowers, right? Mm. They've been transformed.
Yeah, but how does oil go in basket?
It just goes in.
He has a jug.
He does have a jug. The jug is for flowers. The baskets are for oil.
I don't get religion, baby. I've tried.
So
simply don't get it.
So yeah, so these angels are going to go, you know, bring down their baskets of oil, and that will presumably be metaphysically transformed into, you know, good health and plentiful crops or whatever.
It's retirement oil, as we've discussed before.
Exactly. The angels with half-full baskets get half the oil to go deliver as a somewhat reduced reward to their humans who are, you know, they're not high achievers, but they're trying.
And they do get some oil out of the
deal.
They're
doing their best.
Yeah.
Now, as for the angels with the empty baskets, they don't get no oil.
Mm.
Michael tells them, I'm sorry, you can't transfer to different humans. I asked, and the big guy said no. But don't be sad. Just go and curse them with locusts and mildew and storms and all that stuff. Quote, punish them severely with the sword and with death and their children with demons. And then that's the end. And the gate closes and Famael brings Baruch back down to earth and Baruch gives glory to God. That all happens in like one sentence.
Yep.
And the end. And what do the angels think about this plan? Are they happy to curse and plague the humans? Why do they have control over demons that they can send into children? And if they're happily sending demons onto people, then how are they angels? Why are they not demons? The end. No explanation.
No. I think that the sixth and seventh heavens were cut from the piece.
That makes a lot of sense.
Although
there is a resolution here, though. There is a conclusion.
Yeah, but it's like one sentence long.
That's true. You think it was interpolated?
Possibly. I don't know.
By Christians?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't want to blame everything on Christians. Except this. No, I don't know. And it also would be weird if there was a sixth and seventh heaven, but like Michael can go through the door on the fifth and see God right there, like, mm-hmm. then what's in the sixth and seventh heavens?
And if we've already discussed the punishment of the wicked and the reward of the righteous, what is left?
Well, I mean, aren't there like infinite lessons to give people?
I guess.
And not to mention like...
None that are interesting to Baruch, though.
Apparently not. He has very odd concerns. You know?
He's mainly concerned with thickness.
Yeah, he's like a distance-oriented man.
he's like,
he always wants to know where he is.
He's like,
which direction is north?
What distance do you think I would have traveled if this were Earth?
Yeah. Oh, and what street is this? What's this one right here? And which direction are we facing? We came from over there, right? Yeah, okay, cool. We all know that person. And it's fine.
That guy who's obsessed with Matt.
Yeah.
It's just that we don't take him up to see the divine mysteries of God.
For this very reason, because he's going to ask the wrong questions. Although he did, to his credit, ask what come out
what
the phoenix
butt. What the bird
shitted. A legendary question.
And then what's going to happen is God's going to accidentally reveal that he's no different from Satan,
mm-hmm.
that his angels are agents of evil as good, that there actually is no difference between evil and good. It's all just unmitigated power. That's what's important.
Well, we found out that the Leviathan lives in heaven. And,
yeah.
And that's where the bodies of evil people go
and
to get at.
The Babel people get to go into two heavens.
Yeah, that's very confusing.
And they don't get tortured at all. They're just weird looking.
Yeah.
And then Baruch is just like, Google Maps says I traveled 5.1 miles. My Fitbit says I got 7K steps and I'm back.
Yeah, that's an odd one. I think it's about time to rate this book, though.
I think you're right. Baby, what are you going to rate this ding-dang book?
I think I'm going to give it like 150 out of 200 plethora.
Would you care to explain your rating?
I would love to. I think this is a tidy little weird text.
I agree.
It's got a clear through line traveling through the layers of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Like our buddy Enoch.
Like many of our buddies.
It's true. Many of our buddies
from Apocrypha past
have traveled through these delightful layers. Like the layers of a delicious cake. Or such as.
Like a parfait.
But this one in particular.
An onion.
Is packed to the gills with strange stuff. There's really not a lot of filler.
There isn't.
And it's a very interesting snapshot of probably Judaism with a little Christianity thrown in from the 100 to 200 AD period.
Honestly, you could use a little more filler.
Probably.
Because it's written in such a period of flux,
mm-hmm.
that the symbols are very mixed,
mm-hmm.
and very confusing.
Yeah.
And it's hard for us to tell from this vantage point what the fuck it's supposed to mean.
It's making a lot of assumptions about what we expect.
Okay, we've got two whole layers of heaven that are devoted to what happened to the people who built the Tower of Babel. And what happened is they look weird. Okay,
yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Is that bad? Is that neutral? It doesn't seem good, but is it good? I don't know.
Right. So, I don't know. I mean, it's such a strange little thing, but it's got some cool images and references to unusual mythologies.
Yeah, it's so interesting because it has these hybrid animal people, mm-hmm. are very Jewish, right? That's like exactly the type of stuff you find in the Old Testament in visions and, when people are, prophets are seeing heaven and hell and whatever. The chariot stuff is also obviously very Greek.
Right.
And then you got the blood of Christ in there. So it's really a delicious parfait.
Yeah, it's a serious grab bag. What did you think, baby?
I was going to give it 7 out of 10 giant jugs.
Nice.
That speaks for itself.
I think so. 7 is a great number for giant jugs. Also, it's packed full of numerology, which, like, we're not qualified to unpack.
It's because neither of us are 40 years old and married.
That's true. One day we'll be there.
And male. One day you'll be there. I'll never be there.
Well.
But you might sneak some secrets of the Kabbalah to me.
I would love to.
Great.
Smuggle some secrets out? Probably can't talk about it on the podcast.
We have one.
My rabbi is not going to be happy about that.
We have one letter from the mailbag this week from a listener named Oded, a secular Jew raised in Israel, now living in Scotland with his Christian wife.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a life there.
That's our, I mean, that's our core that's like demo.
That's our target demo. He answered some questions we had about like Hebrew language back in our first Kings episode that will bore all our listeners, but they were very interesting to us. So thank you, Oded, for your knowledge.
And thank you for listening to what I think is a top-notch hour of entertainment, education, and sex.
And bird excrement.
But that'll do it for tonight's episode of Sunday School Dropouts. If you want to contact us, just think about the word contact, 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 because you just got to email us. Contact. SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
That's SundaySchoolDropouts.lol, not .com.
Mm-hmm. .com is the hidden sixth heaven where God lives, and you don't want to be there.
No, you'll die of his glory.
That's right. You can follow the show on Twitter at SunSchoolDrop.
You can follow me on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill. O'Neill spelled with an A like the angel Famael.
You can follow me on Twitter at Niko Bakulich. N-I-K-O-B-A-K-U-L-I-C-H.
As always, we thank Elise Carlton for our wonderful logo. And I thank Niko for his music, editing, and sound engineering skills that are integral to this podcast and your listening experience.
Damn, I'm feeling appreciated at the workplace. And all of our listeners are welcome to tune in 2 weeks when we continue our journey into the Bible and back out the other side, dragging them along with
us. Much like cinnamon from a phoenix's ass.
Well, technically from the ass of the worm that crawls out of the phoenix's ass.
And with that,
my name is Niko Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And we'll see you next week. Stay biblical, you simple
Sunday
boys and girls.